We have a number, ladies and gentlemen, an extraordinary number, brand new number. Well, I don't think it's brand new because I think he just recorded it. A number written by one of the great men of the idiom, Mr. Charles Mingus. A flat for Mr. Mingus. And I'd like for him to come over and examine the chart before we test it out. This is a participation number. Is Mr. Mingus in the house? It's one of those things. You mean to tell me Mr. Mingus is going to leave here, me up here by myself with this number? God. Where does he go? You see, what I'm supposed to do in this number, ladies and gentlemen, is sit here while he conducts. And I sit with the band, and I do that. Don't turn the light out, because I won't be able to see what I'm doing here. It starts off with, once there was a clown. Let me tell you about this clown. He used to raise a sweat every night out on the stage and just wouldn't stop. That's how hard he worked. He was trying to make people laugh. He used to have this cute little gimmick where he had a seal follow him up and down a ladder, blowing Columbia, the gem of the ocean, on a B-flat, Sears Roebuck Model 322 A plastic bugle. A real cute little laugh. But they didn't laugh. The people didn't laugh. And you know, a few little things were here and there, and a yip-yap-yap, but not really. And he was booked out on all of those tank towns, playing the Rotary Clubs and the Kiwanis Club, the American Legion, the this, that, and the other club. And you know, and he just wasn't making it. And he had all those wonderful things going on inside of him. He had wonderful greens and yellows and all those oranges. And he's a real happy guy, and all he wanted was to make people laugh. That's all he wanted out of life, is to make people laugh. And then something began to grow. Something that just wasn't good began to grow inside of this guy. Something began to trouble this clown. You know, little things once in a while should happen that would make the crowd begin to move. But they were never the right things. Like, for example, the time the seal got sick on the stage, all over the stage, the crowd just, they just broke up, you know. They laughed like crazy, little things like that. And they weren't supposed to be in the act at all, and they weren't supposed to be funny. And this began to trouble him, and it bothered him until the pain began to grow inside. All those greens and all those oranges and all those yellows, they just wasn't as bright as they used to be. All he wanted was to make that crowd laugh. All he wanted was to make that crowd laugh. That's all he wanted. And there was this one night in Dubuque when he was playing this notary club, and all those dentists and those druggists and those postmen and those butchers, bakers, and dishwashers. And he was leaving the stage when he stumbled over his ladder and fell flat on his face, just flat on his face. And he stands up, and of course he's got a bloody nose, and his face was a mess. And the crowd took one look at him, and they broke out laughing. Oh, they had him rolling on the floor. He just knocked them out flat. And this begins to trouble him a little bit more, a little bit more than more. And he begins to see something. He begins to see something. Things begin to change, but really change, not the least of which our clown changed his act. He bought himself a set of football pads, a yellow helmet with red stripes, and he hired a girl to drop a 10-pound sack of flour on his head every night from maybe 20 feet, 30 feet. Oh man, it was a hit. That just broke him up every night. But not like Dubuque. Not like Dubuque. And all of those colors, all those yellows and those reds and those oranges and a lot of gray, and all he wanted to do was to make the crowd laugh. That's all he wanted out of the world. They were laughing, all right. Not like Dubuque, but they were laughing. And the dough started coming, and he was playing the big town, Chicago, Detroit. And then it was Pittsburgh, and one night, real fine town, Pittsburgh, you know. About three quarters of the way through the act, a rope broke. And down came the backdrop right on this cat's head. And he went flat. And something broke. This was it. What hurt way down deep inside. And he tried to get up, and he looked out at the audience. And man, he had laid them in the aisles. They were laughing. They were laughing like crazy. Oh, you should have seen that crowd rolling in the aisle. This was even better than Dubuque. This was bigger than Dubuque. He really had them going. But this was it. This was the last one. Oh, he began to get calls. His agents. Agents were getting telegrams from London, from the Palladium, from the Palais de Chaillot, from the concert, who's it? From Chicago, from all over the world, Tokyo, Hong Kong. Everybody wanted the clown. But it was too late. This was his last one. 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 They were still laughing. That's all he wanted. All he wanted was to make them laugh. Well, they were laughing. But now he knew. He knew what had happened. The agent, William Morris, kept getting offers. 10,000, 15,000, 20,000, 25,000. Everybody wanted to buy the clown. Everybody wanted to buy the clown. They offered all kinds of money. This is the greatest act ever. More laughs than ever in the world. Send us the clown, they said. We'll pay you. And William Morris sent a wire. It said, that's it. William Morris was his agent. His wire is, William Morris says, William Morris sends regrets. Charles Mingus, where are you? Oh, take a bow, fellas.
It was so bad, I was supposed to go with Duke and conduct with him. With rehearsal, man, I was sure that he wouldn't play my tune. So I said, when you finish it, got somewhere down on it, and it's the worst time, the rehearsal's over, And plus, Cootie Williams walked out. And it only had two or three trumpets. So I'd rather sit up the top of the bleachers for the concert, And Duke played a piece by itself that he says, this is something I've always wanted to do with my band, but we travel so much I don't have time to rehearse anymore. So I decided to do it by myself tonight. And he did it for me, man. I know what you're saying, look, motherfucker, don't fuck with me. It was the worst conversation. I mean, terrible, horrible, beautiful. One of the most from step to step, man. And he played every part all over the piano. People don't know he's a piano player. They would have known that at Berklee College, man. It was so beautiful, man. I almost cried. Then, immediately afterwards, he played something that everybody knew. Concert's going well. I could tell it was coming, and I'm way at the top of the beaches. Because now, ladies and gentlemen, I have a little piece here that's written by a friend of mine that flew down. See, in other words, I came down for a lecture. They're having an lecture group with John Lewis and all. The whole thing was in tribute to Duke. A whole lot of musicians was there. John Lewis got up and talked about how handsome he was. You should hear John speak. John Lewis, faggot motherfucker. I've always admired him. He's so tall. And he was handsome. And he was well groomed. What the fuck is that got to do with it? So I said, well, I'm going to cancel my speech, man. I'll write a tune. I'll do some music and get Duke to play it. And so there was no comparison in Duke and Mingus. I know he will never side the ground. Everybody tried to say that I sound like him, so I want to say that I didn't, I ain't that good. So Duke finally says, as soon as Charles Mingus gets up here, we're going to play his piece, The Clown. And I'm going to read my part. He had a written part with the words, Silence, man.
Charles was hiding up in the bed.
I didn't
want to get up there with all those
sidemen. Especially Cootie Williams was back. Cootie Williams was back there when we walked away from the park. I knew he didn't know his part.
He didn't know his part.
I said, I don't know that shit. And do you know something, man? That motherfucker conducted that thing. He didn't care who missed what. He left to 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. He was the piano, played his part, and he played in the daytime. He played his part, and when the voice came in, he leaned on the piano. And the script fell. He didn't even touch it. It just blew off, He caught it midair. And the people applauded that. man me that his age, you know.
Yeah.
Started me that instead of reading.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's unbelievable, man.
Yeah.
I never told anybody about that one. The music got blown off some kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
If I lived that long and played that good, I would have lived a full life.
You know what Monk said to me? Monk plays Newport.